All right, we're back with another episode of Ryan Seaman and Friends on Adobe Radio. You know, what do they say? Third time's the charm. I can't believe that we're getting to do this. And yeah, this is such a wacky time that we're in. So I've known this next guest for about, I would say, a little bit over a year. And we were hanging out in LA and we got to meet over at the Sunset Marquee. And then, you know, we proceeded to get into a little bit of trouble hanging out. You know, sometimes we'd get together and jam at these like local bars, I guess you could say. And I just think he's a really talented singer, super funny guy. He's a really talented piano player, songwriter. I have Luke Spiller from The Struts. Thank you so much for coming on my show, man. I really appreciate it.
It's all right, mate. It's all right. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here too. So, you know, I just want to get into it. I was going to say every time I have people on my show, I like to get like to get their point of view, their life story, and just everything that comes with them being, you know, like being a musician or a, you know, small business owner or whatever. So I bring on people that I think are interesting, and I just want them to, you know, tell me how they got started with their life and how they end up, you know, being where they are right now, you know. So yeah, because I mean, you grew up in England most of your life, right?
Yeah, my real kind of like introduction to performing was I didn't want to be a singer. I had no interest
really?
Whatsoever. Yeah, like none. When I was growing up, in my youthful years,
yeah,
of like 8, 9, 10, all I wanted to do was be a dancer. That was it.
What?
I was hell-bent on it. Yeah, I just wanted to be a dancer, study like ballet, and go to dance school. That was my, I thought that was my calling card.
who inspired you to like want to be a dancer? That's crazy. I didn't know that.
Well, at that time, I discovered Michael Jackson, and I was just obsessed. So I had this fascination where I just wanted to teach myself how to move, and it, like many good things, it required hours and hours in front of a mirror,
right,
and scuffing up the carpet with your feet and just sort of like doing it, really. But me being me, I wanted to take it to the next level. That just wasn't good enough. I wanted to express it and use it and perform. That's okay. All I really wanted to do.
Yeah. And then that was okay. So you became a dancer. I mean, like, at what point were you just inspired to become, you know, a singer and songwriter and all that?
So the dancing thing didn't like hit off. I wanted to go to like dance school and be sent off, but my parents at the time just weren't comfortable about me potentially going to a place like that, like a boarding school, and sure, having people like raise me. So I just sort of trotted along life, and you know, I was into like music, always kind of was. I mean, especially at this point, I was looking a bit further backwards, like from Michael Jackson, I discovered obviously the Jackson 5, everything that kind of came out of Motown. So I was really obsessed with like James Brown and all these other kind of groups.
So like soul music.
Soul, yeah, music. Yeah.
Cool.
And then of course, like I had an older brother. Well, still have an older brother, but at the time he's like 3 years older than me, so he was getting a, this was when the wave of rap music was coming in from America, like Eminem's first album, a lot of like the new metal stuff, Cypress Hill, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, like all of this stuff. So he was like really into that, and I enjoyed that. I enjoyed it a lot, but it wasn't exactly my voice. It wasn't something I could, you know, being a middle-class white kid in a Victorian seaside town, you know, listening to the album Doggy Style, you know, as enjoyable as it was, I could only relate to it to a degree.
Okay.
The same went for a lot of the new metal stuff, like Limp Bizkit and Linkin Park and Korn. I wasn't really ever a fan of.
Right.
Didn't really get into the pop punky stuff either, but you know, like I dabbled, but I never really quite sort of, it never really like proper resonated with me. And then in the UK, we started having like an amazing wave of bands that were all kind of coming out at the same time. So we had The Killers and The Libertines, Razorlight, and then The Darkness were there as well in that mix.
I think
it was a very like...
Darkness is amazing, man. For anybody that hasn't seen them, but yeah.
They're great. And so there was this massive wave of guitar music, but The Darkness for me in particular just really, really stood out for me. I mean, not just visually, but sonically. Like, yeah, it was like a throwback sound, but simultaneously being sort of next to all these other bands, which were doing the kind of indie thing that was really, really popular at the time. They just kind of stuck out like a sore thumb. And I loved the music. And then from that, I really discovered the likes of Zeppelin and AC/DC, Queen, of course.
How old were you when this was happening for you?
This was like when I was, it must have been like 15.
So, I mean, like, cause look, I've seen you play before. Like, did you have any of that piano stuff like already, you know, built into your repertoire, I guess you could say?
Oh, I mean, we had a house with a piano in it.
Yeah.
And I used to just sit down. I had no idea how to play it whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then I used to play with like my index finger, my middle finger,
uh-huh,
and middle finger. That's how I would make like a triad chord.
Yeah.
Like this. So it was really bizarre. Uh-huh. But I remember like I just had a real affinity with the piano straight away. Like, yeah. I loved the way it was. I loved having all the keys there in front of me and visually being able to see the octaves. And in music class in school, I started just writing these kind of ditties, like these kind of songs that were just made up of like C, F, and G, and then just sing all this random shit over it.
So like all the white keys. Like, so you're not venturing up into like...
Oh, no.
Sharps and flats yet. Okay. Yeah. So you're diddling around on there.
Just doing that kind of thing. And then at this specific school that I was at that kind of age, a friend that I'd known for years, and we'd lost touch because I was living in Spain for a bit. But after coming back to the UK, I ended up going to the same school as him, and he had become a drummer, and he had this band with like a couple of like his misfit friends.
Okay.
And asked if I would like to sing. And I remember the first thing we did was Another One Bites the Dust at the Tea Time concert.
Wow. That's crazy, man. That's so dope. I mean, I hear a little bit of just like everything in your style, you know. I dare say you could be like the next, like, dude, I'm telling you, when I saw you, man, like, there's so many dudes in LA, right? They dress up kind of crazy, you know. Like, I don't want to say you dress up crazy, I'm just saying you have your own unique style, but like, you know, people just like didn't know who you are. People be like, in LA, people be like, what is this dude doing, right? And then I swear to God, man, the minute you see you like play and do everything, you're just like, dude, this guy's like the real deal. And there's not enough of you out there. That's all I'm trying to say. I'm trying to give you props right now. So it's just, yeah, I'm just saying there's so many like phony people that are just in LA, and you know, everybody wishes they could be what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
I think you're the real deal, dude. I mean, I'll say that firsthand. Cause I mean, like the first time I saw you like play was like at the Sunset Marquee thing for that Doors tribute. And I just got to come and be a guest, and then we just, you know, go off and party until the wee hours of the night, and then, you know, We tore that. We're not going to give away the location because I don't want people going there. But then you and I went to this other bar, right? And you just started wailing out. I swear you brought the house down, man. Everybody at this, it was just like an open jam night. You just got up there and then we all got up. It was like you, me and Josh and, you know, from Bad Flower. And we just started jamming like Stones and Beatles and, you know, everything else in between. I remember I got up on the drum kit and I was like, dude, Luke, I don't know how to play this. And you looked at me and you're like, oh, shut up. Just play the song. I was like, what? And so we all started jamming and dude, we literally brought the house out. I still have footage of it. I got to send it to you. But anyway, I just think you're so talented, man. I just think you're the best for real. So, okay. So you're jamming with these people. You do another one bites the dust. What goes on from there? You know, like, is this like your first band or is this like,
it's my first band and the only other band I've ever been in.
That's crazy. That's amazing. Yeah.
So we all really got the bug after that.
Yeah.
And we were the group in school that had the band. So it was, we were definitely them. And it was like that for the next 5 or 6 years after that. So all the way through school, carried on doing loads of gigs like in Bristol and the surrounding area. And yeah, like, you know, it was my first sort of taste of recording. Like we did like an album and everything, and it was fun. It was fun. I mean, I listen to it now and it's hilarious. But
I mean, when you're that young, you know, and you're putting out some of your early stuff, I mean, everybody starts somewhere, you know. It's just
but it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. It's definitely bursting with like personality. We were obsessed with this band called Electric Six from Detroit.
I know who that is. Yeah, that's awesome. I don't know a lot of people who know who they are, but
hardly anyone knows of them, but they really exploded in England.
Okay.
And that song Danger High Voltage, like that had Jack White singing on it as well, was just like amazing. Yeah.
Dude, I you know, I think it's really weird is that when I go to England, like I'll go out afterwards. It's weird how immersed in American music people are sometimes. Like you'll hear like the Killers play, right? You'll hear the Killers and like Block Party, and you'll hear all these bands, like these indie bands, and all of a sudden out of like nowhere, Papa Roach comes on, and then people are still singing at the top of their lungs. And I just never understood that, you know. Like going to England, like it's like they just lump them all together. Like, cause you were talking about, you know, listening to like new metal and like Limp Bizkit was like a thing coming up, you know, and people just were into that. I don't know. I've just always been fascinated by the UK culture, you know, just what things pop in England and what things don't, like Electric Six. It's like, yeah, I don't think they're that big over here, but but over there, I guess they're exploding, you know, I don't know.
Well, they did at the time, but no, you're right. I mean, I think England ever since has kind of had a bit of like a culture identity crisis musically, and it's just what happens. And then all of a sudden bands or an artist just comes out of nowhere, which sings from really sort of like sings from the heart and in their own way.
Right.
And that's when they become real sort of like crowning artists or bands in the UK. I mean, I know I mentioned them earlier, but like when the Libertines came along, that was like our version of the Strokes.
God.
And they were singing, instead of this kind of New York kind of guitar driven sort of meticulous sound that the Strokes had, the Libertines came along and it was dangerous and messy, and you know, they were singing about their own country, and it was kind of really exciting. So it is a strange place for sure.
It totally is, but I love going over there and playing shows. I feel like people appreciate music more over there than they do in America, you know.
Really?
I think so, yeah. In England, it's like, okay, let's get the band over here. They give you everything, you know, that you want, like in your like writer, you know, backstage, mm-hmm. all that crap. And just people just get genuinely excited. And then in America, it's like, okay, let's get this band out of here. We got another thing going on. And yeah, they're just accomplishing whatever they want to do. But overseas, it feels like it meant something more. I don't know. That's just from my experience.
I think it's a case of probably where you come from.
Maybe. Yeah.
I mean, I would say the same, but in America. But maybe that's because I'm British and the band's British.
True. I mean, that could very well be. It's like the grass is greener, I guess. Right?
I think when you come here and I go there,
yeah,
you know, we're perceived as very exotic animals,
right?
You know,
when I go over there, they think I have an accent, right? And then vice versa, you know. Mm. And there's like different territories of like, you know, accents in over in England. I guess like people down south sound more differently than people up north, you know. And you're all just on like an island. Okay, so I think this is a good segue. I want to play a song from you guys, and we'll play. I think we'll play the shorter of the two. But tell me a little bit about this song that we're gonna play. It's called Wild Child. What's it about?
So this is from the new record that we did in lockdown, and it was like a lot of my ideas at the beginning, lyrically, slightly melodically. Like it started on piano. And it was really, it was very moody and very kind of like musical theater. And it just wasn't going to work. but like, lo and behold, the band and Adam was playing this big monster riff.
Okay.
And then the lyric kind of fitted. And I kind of shoehorned some of the melody into it. And it worked, but it was written at a point in my life where I felt particularly wild, shall we say.
Okay.
And
down a bit, yeah. You know, have you tamed it down, or are you still going on the wild side, even though, you know, it's kind of hard right now during this?
I think lockdown's tamed the animal within, but yeah. No, he's still waiting to get loose, but
yeah,
it's a really kind of racy at times lyric, and it's sexed up, and it's a little bit, it's naughty, it's cheeky, it's just, I wanted to have like a, instead of writing a rock song, which was heavy,
yeah,
that had like a lyric that was, you know, downhearted or slightly negative, I wanted to make something that was sexy and like, ooh, okay, so that's what I set out to do.
Awesome. All right, well then here it is. This is the Struts with Wild Child. Here we go. Luke, geez, man, I don't know why you didn't tell that story earlier. Anyway, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just trying to make you laugh. All right, good. So Tom Morello, I think, was on that song, right? Is that
correct?
Yeah, that's crazy. How'd you hook that up? That's wild, man.
I mean, it's wild indeed. Yeah.
Wild. Yeah. He's so talented. You know, a long time ago, I remember a friend of mine and him, we went to the Rainbow together, and I didn't know this. I didn't know. I still like, don't know him. I mean, I've met him like, you know, two or three times, maybe my whole life. And I remember me and him and another friend, her name is Lisa Johnson. We went to the Key Club, which is right next door to the Rainbow. And we went to this like Warped Tour pre-party, and we watched that band Paramore, and this is before like anybody knew who they were. And I remember Tom saying like, man, she's gonna be like the next Pat Benatar, watch what happens. This might have been like, I don't know, like 2005 or something, 2004, I don't even remember. But anyway, yeah, really nice guy, super cool, you know.
He's really nice. I first proper met him in Nashville. We did like these, I can't remember if it was three shows or four.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember, but we did like a similar thing that we did at the Roxy when we ages ago, where we sort of did four nights there. Okay. And we just took over the strip. We did the same thing in Nashville, and we heard that Tom Morello was in town, and he agreed to come down, and he played guitar for Bruce Springsteen, right?
Oh my God, so, really? That's nuts, man.
So we were doing a cover on that tour of Dancing in the Dark, and we were like, do you want to play that? And he was like, yeah. So
so rad.
He got up on stage, and it's on YouTube now, man. It's so sick. Like every now and then, if I'm feeling a little bit like, I don't know, down or whatever, I put it on. I'm like, fucking hell, man. Like,
you just remember. I mean, dude, I mean, full disclosure, I was a huge Rage Against the Machine fan growing up. So, like, that's
me too.
Like, Evil Empire was everything that changed my life. And in fact, yeah, my friend Lisa, who I was talking about, she's the one that shot that photo on Evil Empire of them in the practice room. You know, I guess they recorded that whole record in that room. So she was like in the corner and just like kind of took the picture. She's a legendary photographer. She used to do stuff like Kerrang and everything. Anyway, doesn't matter. But we're, yeah, Tom Morello, super talented guy. He's an innovator for sure. You know, I'm sure he listened to a lot of Zeppelin as well. Yeah. Okay. So we're at the point now where the struts are becoming a thing. I mean, like, how did you guys get your buzz? How did you guys like do? Because I wouldn't know how to do it in England. You know what I mean? Like, if just creating a band from like nothing. Like, how does one go from like being in England to just playing a bunch of awesome shows and then coming over to America, crossing the pond?
It took us fucking years and years. We literally went through like every stereotypical roadblock that a band can sort of like come up against. It was insane. We got picked up by a label shortly after me and Adam formed the band,
right,
way back like 10 years ago now.
There.
And yeah, we got picked up by a label that ended up having the plug pulled out of it. We then got inherited by a major label who didn't really want us.
Right.
Gosh, we had like people, we went through like a lineup change. We and then we had like two years, maybe three, of not really being able to get any shows. We and just playing the shittest venues, everything. We eventually got a van.
Okay.
Put out this album, our debut album, and it started to gain traction in France, out of all places. So this album had Could Have Been Me, Kiss This, Dirty Sexy Money, Put Your Money on Me, like a lot of songs that had done really well for us, didn't do anything in the UK. Not one radio station would play one song. Wow. And I guess in France, they just listened to it and were like, oh, I guess these guys must be massive because these songs are great. So they were just playing it nonstop. And from those shows that we had in France, we then got a massive gig opportunity to support the Rolling Stones in Paris.
What?
And
when was that?
From that was, oh my God.
Was that like, so that was like still early on in your career? Is this like halfway through or?
About 7 years ago.
Oh my God, dude, that's wild. Okay. So I don't even know what would happen if that happened to me. I mean, the closest thing I could say, one of the biggest things I ever opened up for was like Iron Maiden or like Guns N' Roses, you know, with one of my last bands. But I mean, Rolling Stones, it doesn't get bigger than that. You know, it really doesn't. Like, that's it. That's the top, you know? So
it doesn't get cooler either, man. Like we've been lucky enough to support them like four times now.
What?
Four?
Wow. God.
Yeah, that's so great.
That's so wild. Dude, that's honestly really fucking wild. I remember the only other band I know, like personally, that got to play with the Stones was that band Flogging Molly. I guess the bill was Flogging Molly and John Mayer and the Stones. Like that seems like a weird bill to me, but
it's a weird bill, yeah.
Yeah, I only found out about that because I was on like Instagram one day and my band had a day off in Amsterdam and I was looking through and the bass player, Nathan from Flogging Molly, he was in Amsterdam too. I was like, what the hell? So I like text him, I'm like, yo, you're here? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, I'm at this bar. He's like, do not leave. I only have Wi-Fi. Just stay. I'm like, oh, great. Because sometimes Nathan's notorious for like being late and stuff. But he was there pretty, you know, on time. And he took me around the city. We went to cafes and, you know, smoked some marijuana. It was great. Yeah. 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 Amsterdam was fun. So anyway, I don't know why I went on that side tangent. But yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, wait, you're in Amsterdam. Why the hell not? once in a lifetime kind of thing. So, okay, so you're playing with the Stones. What happens from there? So people start to notice, obviously, like the band.
Yeah, I mean, just from like the clout of having that gig, that then got us the attention of like some management that was located in the States. Okay. So at that time, we decided that the management that we had been on really had kind of ran out of ideas and were throwing, you know, some funny questions into the mix, like, you know, does Luke need to kind of change his style? Do we need to change the style of music? Like, what's happening? And yeah, it just so happened to be like at that time, Adam did a great job of getting in touch with the management that we're on now. And then from that, you know, they used like the Stones show and the lack of hype in the UK is almost like more of a selling point, because they turned around and said, like, to, you know, Interscope in the States, for instance, that we're on now, you know, listen to these songs. They're great. The UK hasn't played one of them. And we reckon that we could really do something with this. And the funny thing is, we didn't have a label. We just signed to a new management company in America. And one of my managers could have been me, to radio at Alternative, and it got put on The Verge, and we didn't even have a record label. So it was really cool.
You're doing all this without a label, the Stones and everything. That's why, I mean, how did you even get on that show? Just because you're gaining popularity in France? Like, that's how.
So we were on a UK label when we did, yeah, the Stones show, Virgin.
Yeah.
But I, you know, they were so uninterested. I seriously believe that they even knew that we were doing it. Like, no one in the office knew our name. Like, they'd be like, oh, did you hear about the stuff? They'd be like, who? You know, who's this band? So the getting on The Verge at Alternative, and could have been me coming in to the Alternative chart, that was done while we were still looking for a label in America.
Oh my God, that's so crazy. Okay, so now we're fast forwarding. You get new management and all that stuff. So you guys are grinding your teeth for years and years in the UK. You get picked up in France, and then you do the show, and then get management out here. So I mean, what's the next step?
The next step was fairly obvious. It was like, I think we got a top five hit with Could Have Been Me at Alternative, and our management were just like, look, you pack your bags, you got to come. And we were like, you know, just a bit naive at the time. We were like, oh, you know, like, oh, we weren't exactly like amazingly excited to be going over and to the States, because for a British band, American bands look at touring differently. Like, if you're an English band, you go on tour for 2 months, that's a fucking long tour.
It is really long. And then when I go to the UK, it seems like a tiny vacation with just a lot of drive. Yeah. But
and so we were set out to basically be playing shows nonstop for an entire year all across America, like every little bit. And we had to basically start from the ground up in America with some good radio support. So for the first, you know, for the first year, we were doing what we did like in a van, but with a supportive label. And soon enough, like, we started gaining more and more popularity. And then we got the bus, our first bus.
You know? Yeah, man. No, I mean, it is a game changer. You know, every time I've been to the UK, we've always just done the van, because it's like way cheaper, and then just hotels and drives are all short. So that's why we just never would have the bus, unless like maybe like you're going to Europe, you know, then you're, if you're like piggybacking.
Yeah,
you know, but
we always do Europe as well simultaneously. So we start in the UK and we'll normally always go to Paris, maybe two shows in France, then go into like Italy and stuff like that. So we take the jumbo cruises, the big orange jumbo cruises. Yep.
The cruise. I've taken that, what's it called? That train that goes like underground. That's a little scary, you know, like you're going underwater.
Yeah, the Eurostar.
Yeah. Oh my God. You know? Well,
I haven't done that.
Oh yeah. It's it costs a little more, you know, to do it. Yeah. But yeah. So it's a crazy thing that they can like make that happen, you know, just like a big tube going under under the ground.
I think if we found ourselves using trains,
yeah,
you know, the band and crew can take, you know, the Eurostar, and I'll meet them on the Orient Express or something in stopping at Paris.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I've never had the tour by train, but I remember going over to Japan. I've only done like a show in Japan, and then I went over there for vacation once. But I remember just like bands were like, "Oh yeah, come to our show in like Osaka. Come hang out." And I'm like, "Well, how are you guys getting there?" And then like they would just take the train. They wouldn't do, you know what I mean? Like take their gear, and then gear is provided everywhere. So I don't know.
The bullet train, man. I've done that journey a lot. It's pretty fascinating how quick that goes. You know.
Yeah. For sure. Okay, so you're in the States, you're doing the van stuff. I mean, at what point was it like turning for you guys to, where you're like, okay, you know what? Now we've kind of conquered America, and this is just.
I reckon the last year, well, minus 2020, so
right.
2019 and the end of 18. I mean. Was the first time where all around the world we were consistently doing amazing sold out shows, which were really big, healthy audiences, like between 1500 and 2500 every night. And we're like, just that amazing feeling when you're going up the bill every year in on the festivals. So it's only felt like the last two or three years that we've kind of really made our made a statement and sort of like given ourselves a little place in the rock music scene in America.
Yeah, I'm just gotta say, like I'd never seen your band until I got to go to your show at House of Blues, and it was just it was fantastic, man. Just everything about it, you know. I mean, it's weird because like I feel like our bands are like sort of in a similar school, you know, like we got this like David Bowie, you know, T-Rex kind of thing going on with our imagery and everything. But yeah, I mean, it's really hard for a rock band to like stand out like today, I think, because there's so much like, you know, the TikTok culture is really starting to take over, you know, like all the rap music and the trap music and stuff like that. So it's really great to see that rock is still going, you know, still like.
But the thing is, like, there's a big difference between, there's a huge difference between someone stood in their back garden or in their bedroom making like a minute long TikTok video, which hands down could be really clever and edited, but you can't be the experience of time on a stage and going through the little things, the moments when you're really enjoying a song and then, I don't know, the guitarist like breaks a string and you're left with no guitar, and then the band all kind of looks at each other, like those are learning curves. Or when you go over your time set and you get the plug pulled out on you, we've had that done to us, you know.
Who hasn't, though? I mean, honestly, when you've been doing it that long, I mean, I'm kind of fascinated that like you've just been in your same band, you know. I mean, like everybody has like the band they start with or whatever, but then, you know, just going from that to just your band is crazy. I grew up in like a small town, so there wasn't like a lot of people to jam with or play with. So like I was in like multiple bands at once, just like in like my local scene. But then it took me having to move out to Los Angeles to like find real players and people that can like, you know, keep up. And then, you know, once I found Dallin, it was weird that I had to find Dallin in Los Angeles because he was from Utah too, and we both didn't know each other, you know. So it's like, I mean, he and I have been playing music together now like on and off for like 12 years because he went and had his crazy opportunity with Panic for, you know, the last like 8 years. And then, you know, that whole time though, we were just jamming. Like we put out Christmas songs, we put out like whatever, whether it was under his name or, you know, our old band, the Brobex or whatever. But it's kind of fascinating to me how like everybody has like their own journey, you know, of just like how, because there's no right or wrong way to do music. But like, yeah, I was going to tell you that, like, I think, you know, 9 times out of 10, I'm trying to tell this to people all the time, and I probably say it like almost every show that I do, but like 9 times out of 10 bands fail, right? And it's the 1 in 10 that were too stupid to stop that like eventually succeed, right? So, I mean, you're telling me that you've been doing this now with your band for like 10 years, you know, it's like you just never stopped and you didn't quit and you just kept going, you know? I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of, I'm way too, I'm too vain to stop.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Yeah. Like what, like, yeah, the 1 in 10 that make it were the ones that were too dumb to stop. Right. It's like, I have been really dumb. I haven't stopped at all. I remember going into MTV and they're like, how does it feel to be like an overnight success? And I said, well, it took me 17 years to be an overnight success. And then everybody just started laughing in the room, but it's true, man. Like you just don't stop. And I don't even think like, I think I'm just now at the beginning of my band's career, you know, like we just did by the time this comes out, it'll be like a couple months already, but we just did like our first late night, you know, thing, our look, it was probably Down's like, you know, fifth or sixth or seventh time doing any of that stuff. But it was really exciting for me. Cause it's something I always like dreamed of doing, you know, it's like you just like, you're a kid watching the show. You're like, man, I want to be like, I remember seeing like Green Day on like Letterman or something, you know, and be like, oh my God, that'd be so cool to do that. You know,
did you, how many takes did you use when recording?
We did 4. Cause it was rad that we actually didn't get to go to the Jimmy Kimmel thing cause of quarantine. Cause like when you're like live in there, like, you know, you can't control the audio. You can't control what's going to happen. So it was like our camera people, we got to control the sound. And I think it was the best possible scenario to just show, you know, TV, like for people that just haven't heard of us, like what we can do. And it was rad too, because like usually it's just the two of us on stage. So we were able to have like backing singers. We had 3 backing singers and a guitar player. So it was really a cool setup.
You know? That is cool. Yeah.
So it was dope. And I hope
a good time.
Yeah. I mean, we only toured like the two of us because we're just cheap bastards. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
So you know what they say. It's like you take like a pizza pie. And you have to like divide it, you know, it's like, I don't know. I'm making bad analogies. So, I mean, what's like the next thing you think, that, I mean, obviously given this quarantine crap, it's like, what do you think the next thing is for your band? You know, it, like what do you think is going to happen now? I mean, you really,
we put out a record in lockdown, which was great, but I think, you know, it's funny, like looking back on it, a third album, well, all of them are important, but I think like once you get past the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, you can sort of relax a bit. So I do think it's quite funny looking back that we decided to put out our third album consisted of like 10 songs that we accumulated, wrote and record in 10 days. So in hindsight, it's kind of like had a little bit of a mixed review, but I'm kind of ready to move on to the fourth record and maybe just sort of like take a little bit more time, maybe not try and do something as crazy, like, hey, let's do a whole album in 10 days, you know, not like the song suffered, but yeah. The previous two albums took, you know, sometimes the best parts of 2 years to do. So you go from that and then something like this, it's, you're going to get a very different result. But we're definitely going to be putting out new music. I've got some really cool projects lined up as well this year, which I can't go into deeply. It's going to be so sick.
Does it involve me seeing you at some point?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. And I think people are just going to absolutely love it. It's let me just tell you now, it's what the world absolutely needs.
I love that. I can't wait to see it unfold and, you know, for you to do your thing. I mean, who knows when we're going to get back to anything. I mean, I think every band that has some sort of record out right now has plans, you know, to try to kick in the high gear as soon as this is all over. But, you know, I'm trying to be optimistic. I don't think anything's going to happen this year, man. I really don't. I want it to so badly. I don't know what it's like over in the UK right now. In America, it's pretty messy still. None of this.
It's bad here as well. But honestly, man, like, I know it's an unpopular thing to say, but I'm absolutely loving it.
What, just being, because you guys have probably been busy. You know, at first I was like, okay, this is kind of a vacation. Actually, no, I take that back. April, May, I think I started to have like a big freak out. I was like, wait a minute. Because, dude, I've been touring nonstop since like 2006. I think the longest time I had been like in one place was like 8 months in a row. And now, I've like, you know, that's been, you know, succeeded over a period of time. I haven't been on tour in like over a year now. So I haven't played shows, nothing. But yeah, and then because like the beginning of last year, we were making our record, and then all of a sudden, just boom, it just stopped. Just everything, you know? Like when I was hanging out with you like last February, like I was like in the studio. Like I was like at nighttime, I would just go out and like chill with you guys, you know, and just be an idiot. And it was awesome. And then I just go back to the studio the next day, you know. But now as soon as we got done recording, bam, everything happened, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, I'm instead of like because the lot like being in a national lockdown definitely makes you or can make you feel like a bit down in the dumps, like, oh, can't do anything. But I'm past that. I passed that ages ago. I'm like, this is completely out of my hands. And you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy it. And every time I feel myself maybe getting a little bit negative about it, I'm just like, I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, I'm not tired. I'm in one place.
Yeah.
Like, just take yourself back to the times where you finished a tour that has gone on for 3 months straight. And those 2 weeks that you have before you do another one, the feeling that you have of just like, it's fine to not do anything. I'm not saying I'm not doing anything. Like I'm staying very productive as much as I can, but in my own way, at my own pace. So, and I know for a fact that the moment this all kind of lifts a little bit and we can do what we do best.
Yeah.
It's going to be nonstop once again.
Oh yeah. So most of it. I'm sure you're writing a bunch. I mean, like I'm writing remotely. I mean, Dan and I are just sending files to each other. You know, I'm just the goal is once this is over is just to like not stop like ever. So be on tour for the next like 2 years straight. Hopefully that's my goal anyway. I don't know. But
dude, what's gonna happen.
Yeah. Well, Luke, I just want to thank you for being on my show. So we're about to wrap it up. We're gonna close out with one of your songs, and I think this is a great time to talk about that. And then, you know, thanks again, you know, just for taking time out of your day. You know, I know it's late over there in the UK and your day is almost over, and my day is almost kind of beginning. But tell me a little bit about this next song we're gonna play. It's
This next song was just like an amazing moment during the creative process of the new record, where we were like 4 or 5 songs deep in a really good sort of momentum. And I've always wanted to have a song that was like the Stones Dance, Little Sister Dance, and just had like this repetitive groove. And we just started jamming it. And the vocal take was the first rough vocal take I did, just singing out these lyrics. And it just all came together so beautifully. And I just love it. Every time I listen to the record or want to get taken back there mentally, this is the song I put on and just dance, you know?
All right. Well, and then before we sign off, I mean, if people want to get a hold of you or look you up or anything, like what's the best way to check you out, you know?
Check me out.
On the interwebs.
The internets.
Yeah.
I guess the Struts, Instagram at Struts. Obviously we've got, you know, we're on the YouTubes channels.
All right.
On all that. But yeah, I reckon just like anything these days, I think Instagram's kind of got most of it covered. But, you know, we've got the struts.com for people who want to, you know, buy their girlfriend a t-shirt and make them happy and stuff, you know.
There you go. You're the first person that's ever dropped a merch link. I'm not joking. Out of like all God, how come people don't use that more? All right. So the Struts on Instagram. So check them out, you know. And then if you want to find Luke, just, you know, use Google because Google's a thing these days.
Yeah, man. Apparently on Google, I'm worth $165 million.
You're kidding. Dude, on Google, it says I'm worth 1.6. So I got some work to do. All right. So, Luke, thank you so much for being on my show, man. We're going to close out the show with their song called Cool. And it was really cool of you to just take time out of your day to just hang out with me. And I really appreciate that. And hopefully...
Cool. Thanks for having me. It's been really cool.
Yeah. Hopefully we have a cool time next time, you know?
man. All right, cool it, mate.
Cool. All right, this is the Stretch with Cool. We'll see you guys next time.